Chonilla.
Welcome to the Interracial John Podcast. This is your host, Leslie Mack. I'm joined, as always,
by a very white guy.
And this is a momentous day on the John. We have our friends from the Great White North. Chonilla.com is in the house. What's up, Charlaine Close?
Upper Americans.
What's going on, guys?
What up?
Thanks so much for joining us for part two of the Interracial John / Chonilla mashup. We are getting into part two of our discussion, which went longer than expected, as always, when the four of us get together. And we are going to jump right into the action, starting with a little Yes, All Cops, Canadian style.
We should move on to, unfortunately, less lighthearted things.
What?
Canadian edition.
Canadian edition of Yes, All Cops is here. Yo, so they came around looking for you the other day. Word, bust it.
Informer. You know, say that I'm a stormy Iago man. You keep on bumming. So, Yes, All Cops and Yes, All Cops Canadian edition, y'all.
Yeah.
Our friends up north.
That's right. So I actually sent you guys a video, but it doesn't translate well to podcast, so I won't put it, but of some student protesters clashing with police yesterday. That happened in Montreal, no? Or was it?
Yes,
it was in Montreal.
No, it's in Quebec.
Oh, in Quebec. Okay, gotcha. Quebec City. Which was just disturbing to me to see how brutal the police were. And they were firing the tear gas into the crowd, but like aiming at people.
Yes.
And I was like, That's not how that works, sir.
Right?
You're supposed to like shoot it in the air so it goes to an area.
He's using the projectile.
Not using the projectile, basically like a bullet. And you're standing next to this person. So that's kind of dumb, especially because they didn't have any gas masks on, the police. It was like,
there's something in, firearms training. And it's called muzzle control. And basically, you don't point the muzzle of a firearm towards anything that you don't intend to destroy.
Right.
So if you have an intention of destroying this thing, then you can point your firearm at it. But otherwise, you shouldn't be pointing that. And if you fail to do that, if you hurt somebody,
it means
that if you've been trained with a firearm and you hurt somebody with a firearm, you did it intentionally.
Yep.
Yeah.
The training here in the United States is SAFE, S-A-F-E. And the E, the last letter of it, is execute, meaning you don't pull your gun out to do anything unless you plan to execute the person. Like, that's the purpose of the gun. So it's a form of firearms training. It's like, you know, safety on and aim and fire and execute. But right. It's like the purpose of the gun is like, you know, not to be fucking around with it and in a protest pointing it at people. Like, you're planning executing those protesters, then okay, then do that. But otherwise, the fuck are you doing?
Wow.
Insanity. But the article I did pull was about Yves Francoeur, who is the Montreal Police Union boss, who says that multi-ethnic population is a risk to officers. The president of Montreal's police union says officers here are a target for attacks because it's a, quote, multi-ethnic city. Yves Francoeur told Radio Canada that, quote, police officers are not immune to the possibility of attack because of the multi-ethnic character of Montreal. When asked to clarify his statements on CBC's Daybreak, he said radicalized Islamic attacks are a factor the police need to consider. He said the police have good relationship with Muslim leaders, but that radical attacks are a concern for the police force. Quote, we have good cooperation with those communities who have to face some very extremist individuals in their own communities, but we're working with them. He said that there's still an ongoing investigation into the man arrested on Friday for allegedly making threats against police, but believes the man was motivated by religion. I know from the investigation there was a relation with religion, Islamist, end quote.
Fucking police.
Yeah.
Especially the French police. Yeah. Well, not French, but.
And the first time that the first comment that he made, you know that he was, and I know that his he won't be able to see this, and he won't be able to understand this. But he was trying to, you know, not point out specifically the radical Islamic group. Like, he was actually trying to be non-offensive to them.
Right. Huh. He was trying to be general. Right. He was trying to generalize in his racism.
So I'm not going to offend this one subset. I'm going to offend the entire group.
Yes.
Right. Like, I'm doing me to laugh. I'm sorry.
It's that's some funny shit.
No, it's true. Yeah, yeah, yeah. So, yeah, that's Yes, All Cops, Canadian edition. So, thanks for that, Canada.
Mm-hmm. Bad Boys A.
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 A. So.
You want to talk about Twitter, Shirley?
Yeah, Shirley wanted to talk about Twitter.
What?
Uh-oh. Uh-oh. Yeah.
Don't want to be keep playing it.
He's not a player. He just tweets a lot.
Yeah, Drew's Twitter. Drew is a Twitter beast.
I think Drew has grown addicted. Two I'm just extra addicted. Thumbs.
Yeah,
I'm literally. It's like crack. It's like crack.
It's your crack.
Let me tell you something. A year ago,
you shouldn't say it's like crack. That's
a year ago, I was on Twitter and Drew was not on Twitter, and he was like, "Twitter's so stupid. I hate Twitter. Why are you always on there? It's so dumb. Why are you talking to all these random people? Nobody cares. It's so stupid, 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 stupid." And now look at him.
Do you know how many followers he has?
Mm-hmm. I'm gonna look right now. Let's see how many he has.
Amazing.
Every day it goes up by like 40 more fucking people. It's insanity.
I just tweet a lot. That's all.
You do tweet.
And there's a compounding effect.
Is that what it is?
Yeah.
Compounding.
Like once you cross certain thresholds, it starts to go faster.
17,600 followers is what he's
like, averaging. I still remember.
But Drew, why is it surprising? Drew uses Twitter a lot.
I do. I tweet constantly. How many tweets do I have? 30,000?
How do you...
Let me see.
It's over 30,000.
Yeah, 34,800 tweets.
Four years of having Twitter through like Chonilla,
Twitter is like a part-time job for Drew.
It's true. It's true.
You're right.
But he has people like leaders in the Black Lives Matter movement that like when white people start getting out of pocket, they just tag him and say looping very white guy. And he just got to go in and be like, fucking tool bag now because he's an idiot too. Just like he has to
I'm kind of astounded by this, but that's about 100 tweets a day.
Yes.
You do about 100 tweets a day, dude?
No, I don't. I don't.
Yeah, you do.
I had some automation for a while that might have added a few thousand.
Yeah, a few thousand out of 36,000. Man, get the fuck out of here.
It's probably more like 60, 70 tweets a
day. I've sent 26,700 tweets, and I only have 3,000 followers. So
how do you keep up with admirable, people, man, like tweeting you? Like, how do you...
You need four thumbs.
Yeah.
You just, you know... Have your phone and you so there's different things that like, you know, if you want to like what's successful, and I didn't really like explore this and like seek out, but just sort of like as I was using Twitter, I was like, okay, this is what, you know, I like to do and this is working, I'll keep doing this. But there's a couple things. One would be like have a more narrowly defined platform or purpose. Like if you had like a mission statement, like, you know, mine's fighting white supremacy and white privilege. That as a platform for Twitter, you know, I don't tweet about like, you know, how to get away with murder and this or that. So the more general you are, the harder it is to build a big audience. You have to be really funny or witty or really quick or topical or, you know, the first person to say this or that. Whereas if you have a more narrowly defined niche, you can speak within that space, you know.
Yeah, and that's how it should be. You should be speaking about stuff you know about, right?
Yeah, but even then, though, I have a lot of other interests that I don't talk about at all. You know, right. Like even the space I have on the platform I have on Twitter is even more narrowly defined than any other space I have. Facebook, real life, you know, this podcast, it's really narrowly defined.
Yeah, and you definitely, like, with the podcast and with your Twitter – what is it? What do they call that when you're not appearance, your Twitter presence? Mm. Mm. Definitely like speaks to the hard work that you guys are doing. You know what I mean? And the focus and the priority you guys have in your life.
It's definitely, you know, and I like Leslie said, I was poo-pooing on Twitter like a year, more than a year ago. I hardly was on Twitter until like July of last year. But I love it. It's very... I feel very connected to a great, you know, group of different people, and we have, you know, variety of different discussions about, you know, different race and supremacy, and I like it. I've met some really great people.
Like an amplifier on your voice, and you're doing a great job at it, man.
Well, thanks. And I deliberately follow, you know, certain leaders and certainly try to amplify black voices and do as much as I can. But I even, I don't say I don't amplify black voices, but because I speak mostly to white people, a lot of it's, you know, amplifying other, you know, just, I don't know, things about supremacy. So even if it is black voices and people speaking, it's typically about, like, I don't, there's, you know, like things concerning the black community that I don't necessarily amplify. That's not my platform. So I'm like, when I say I'm really narrowly defined, like it's really narrow about white privilege and white supremacy. And I think that makes it easier for me. I don't have to like think about, oh, is this fitting here or there? It's like, nope, this is, you know, and I've made mistakes and missteps. I had to kind of learn along the way. And then that compounding effect as the number of people that follow you that grows, there's like a, I'm sure there's an algorithm within Twitter that's like, okay, the number of people determines how much this person sees or doesn't see that tweet. I don't know, but it definitely goes up, it ramps up steeper once you cross certain benchmarks like 2005, even like 10,000. It really, I was like, wow, this is, and now it's been a sustained kind of growth from 10,000, but I was still tweeting as if I only had like a couple hundred followers when I had like 4,000 or 5,000, and I got checked a couple times. I was like, oh, I fucked that up. And there's enough people that follow me in a variety of different, I would say not disciplines, but you know, people that are more concerned about ableism, or some people that are more worried about feminism or patriarchal conditioning versus terms. So I have to be very, I won't say careful, but I've definitely changed my approach to Twitter. I don't fire off tweets randomly. I have to think more. I take more time. I save a bunch, come back to it, because it's, you know, only 140 characters, and I don't want to fuck it up.
And you do a lot of stuff like through DMing too. Like you'll want to, because that's the other thing is usually when these people loop you in, like you're not trying to have a public conversation with them. Like you
not
really,
necessarily.
If you're able to, you try to talk directly to them, especially if you can tell that like they're just not seeing it versus they're just being an asshole. If they're just being an asshole, then you publicly shame them, you know, mercilessly. But if they're just like not getting there or not getting it, you're like, listen, let me break this down for you and explain to you why you're not seeing this correctly, you know, kind of give them a different perspective for them to look at it. Doesn't always work, but I do see that that's something that you do all the time.
Yeah, and I don't even, I've even got away from the sort of like public shaming. There's sort of like a current backlash, what they call like the privilege of checking privilege and the privilege checking culture and shit. Like people kind of like, I don't know. I don't say they get off on like, it's some sort of still, I'm better than that other white person. I'm more enlightened to my privilege and I'm going to point out where you're wrong about it. And I don't really condone that. That's not my objective when I'm talking to somebody. It's more like, hey, you've got, you know, spinach in your teeth. Let me, you know, pull you aside privately and tell you your fly is down. Like, you know what I mean? Like you don't want to be publicly, that's why, like you said, sometimes it's a DM. But so there was one, was it yesterday?
Yes, it was yesterday.
And I don't know if you guys have seen this. We'll reread it for you. But it's an epidemic. And I blame Nicole Sandler and race war,
I blame everything
Elon
on Nicole
James.
Sandler, actually.
And you guys remember that. Did you see that whole business on Twitter?
I'm willing to bet that Clove did not.
I you are correct.
Oh, is this the lady with Elon and everything?
Yeah. So Nicole Sandler has a blog and a radio show, and she's on Twitter, and she's got, you know, she had a pretty decent following, and she had either been on Elon's show or been on a panel where her and Elon had been on.
Been on Elon's show. She met him once.
Okay. Let's... So she thought they had some sort of relationship, and she asked him about a few different things, and he was having a private sort of email exchange, and she felt, he wrote a blog post that did not reference her or her name, and everything she and him had was all email. So he writes about it because he's a writer and he makes content, and no one would have known shit for Shinola, but here she comes like pissy, like, I demand you take that down. It's obviously about me. Like, no, he didn't use your name. No one knows it's about you. Like, what are you talking about? So then she released the entire email string that she'd had with Elon, thinking that it was going to like bolster her cause, and it made her look horrible. Like, it was like, you know, like, oh, the, you know, I tend to believe Elon in this situation. Like, oh, here's your whole email exchange, and poof, yeah, Elon's right. Your privilege is really on fleek right now, lady. Like, it just was bad. So then she went on her show and tried to have one of Elon's come on. He's like, well, why don't you have, because they're talking about Patricia Arquette and the, you know, whole instance with raising black women in her statement on the Oscars. So they had one of his co-hosts, Imani, who, on the show, and it was just, again, like an absolute train wreck. And she ended up like deleting her Twitter account, like blocking a bunch of fucking people, and just was like, you know, the if you were going to look up a dictionary or like write, like if someone comes to you and says, hey, what you said is inappropriate and erases black people's perspective in this, and I'd like you to take a look at it, in exactly the wrong way to respond to that, Nicole Sandler. Like that, like step by step, defensive, deflexive, you know, belligerent, try to like bolster other people to your side by smearing the other person. Like she went to like other like progressive blogs, like, look what Elon's doing to me, he's attacking me. Like it was just, it was horrible and just ridiculous in every way.
Exactly. It was like, oh, so exactly. Now critique or saying anything that you said is bullshit is attacking you. First of all, it's so dangerous from a historical perspective to have a white woman accusing a black man of attacking her, mm-hmm. in just generally speaking. And then secondarily, it's like, nobody was attacking you. Are you threatened right now? No. What they were doing were calling you on your bullshit. And because you didn't want to be called on your bullshit, you're trying to say that it's everybody else's problem and not your own.
I think white people used to call black people uppity back in the day when they started speaking up for themselves, right?
Yep, exactly. Yes. How dare you? Mm-hmm. How dare you? So she followed a pretty, I think I tweeted at the end, I said, today a liberal white person at Glitzy Sky, if you want to follow her or not, came into DeRay's mentions and refused to listen to people telling her why media narratives are critical. This person, again at Glitzy Sky, then blocked everyone trying to respond and deleted all of her ignorant tweets. So Friday's lesson.
Do we get to read them?
Oh yeah, we're going to be reading them all.
So, and this is one of the benefits of having a nice following. So DeRay looped me. He's like, dude, just, you know, looping very white guy. Like, you didn't even like say anything else. Just like, look at this conversation. I'm like, oh, for Christ's sake. So I start, you know, going to her one by one. I'm being like polite, and people see it because I'm, you know, I'm not like private, right? I have a public account. So, but I'm not highlighting them. I'm like adding her, making a conversation. And but so the beginning, the longest story, DeRay's talking about media narratives, the plane crash, the German wings plane crash, and they're talking about the pilot Lubitz in a way that was sort of like he had mental health and this and that. And there's a bit of a, you know, hey, because he's a white guy, he's getting, you know, the way media treats white mass murderers, because that's what he did. He killed 150 people versus the way they treat, you know, innocent black victims. Yes. So it's a very, you know, important sort of highlight to have this conversation.
And her first tweet to him was, is this a hoax? Are you truly obsessed with blaming someone's complexion for every issue in the world? Wow. So disappointed.
So, wow. And he writes back right away, just like, feel free to block or ignore me.
Yeah, okay, hold on a second. Okay.
So it starts on the bottom, if you're opening the doc, it starts on the bottom
How do I see this? How do I see this? It's like I didn't get it.
You didn't get it?
Nope.
Uh-oh.
Skype. Okay, well, I
Skyped it to you. I Skyped the link to you.
Send it to me.
The link?
I Skyped the link, yeah. You should be able to open the doc that has all the... Because it was screenshots. Because she deleted all of her tweets. So we can't just go to her Twitter feed now. But luckily, Drew's acolytes came...
Hey, acolytes, come
whatever,
on.
Whatever, followers, whatever.
Acolytes, I take umbrage with that.
Okay, fine. I said followers. Relax yourself. Came to the rescue and sent us these... images, screenshots of her tweets that she deleted. She thinks she's slick. And I told her this shit yesterday. I said, you can block me if you want, but I'm going to read every one of your bullshit ass tweets on my show.
I know. When I saw that, I was like, oh my God, this is going to be so good.
The thing is, she's got like 14,000 followers.
She has a lot of people that follow her.
She's tweets a lot about Black Lives Matter and tries to, you know, I don't want to call it like fake allyship, but it's allyship on her terms.
Correct.
And that's not really allyship, right? It's, you know, anyway.
So DeRay said, feel free to ignore or block me. And her response, your answer is always ignore or block. Never discuss. I just don't understand how Black Lives Matter has evolved to blame Whitey for everything.
He says, if you don't see how the reporting of this would have been different if you weren't white, then you don't get it. I've been explaining all morning. You want a personal explanation for why race matters? That's intense.
No, it's not I always want an explanation. However, quote, they should not always be blamed solely on their skin complexion. Okay. So at this point, a bunch of people, you know, came in, was just kind of like, and DeRay was sort of, you know, kind of trying to have a sort of discussion with her. So he's just saying...
He says, all of my commentary has been on the media framing. Who is the they, in quotes, you speak of?
Mm-hmm.
And then, I don't know if she wrote back, because you seem to just move past the impact of whiteness in these spaces, and then he looped me in.
Right. That's when he looped you in.
And I was polite. Mm-hmm. I really was. I said, oh, go ahead.
She says, but hearing day in and day out that whites are supremacists and privileged, and that being the excuse for everything is beyond frustrating, you guys.
Well, where's the tweet? She said something about if you're so concerned about the media narrative, why don't you become a reporter?
That comes up in a little bit because she said that to somebody else. So then she says, I was making a statement. I'm in no way a troll. I've supported and marched my whole life. Mrs. Robinson said they always want an explanation. There are too many attacks and divisions occurring. I feel we could all benefit from taking a step back and reanalyzing our goals. Sometimes we defeat our message and purpose.
Somebody's got a black boyfriend.
Or used to.
Exactly. So one of the people said, and one of the other people were just talking about how, you know, this is really important, the media narrative, how the media portrays black people, what that does in the story, and that this is an illustration of how different it is because it's not a person of color that committed mass murder, just to be clear, and ran a plane into the ground with over 100 innocent people on board. And because it's a white person, the narrative has been, oh, what happened to him? He had mental illness. How did we get here? If that had been a Muslim person or someone that was Islamic, it would have been, you know, they would have demanded that every Muslim on the planet apologize for this situation occurring.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what DeRay was talking about. And for her to make it seem like, oh, you're blaming white supremacy for everything. It's like, no, we're not blaming. This isn't a blame game. This is about education. This is about seeing the ways in which supremacy seeps into every part of our life and our society and the ways that it shows up. And this is an illustration of that fact. And
this is a large population that feels misrepresented. You know what I mean? That there's a voice that needs to be heard. It's shouting. It's screaming. It's fucking head off.
She don't want
to
hear it.
You have the option to listen to it or not.
Exactly.
And I think I said to her, facts are facts. You know, it's not, you know, it's truth. You can't really be mad about that.
Yeah, your privilege gives you, they don't see that they're just the position they're in allows them to say, I don't feel like listening or dealing with this. Mm. If you're not in the power position, you have no choice but to deal with it and live with it.
Yep.
Right. So she says, one of the gentlemen, Kingsborough, had said, you know, it's really important about this media story. And she says, so, King, you're frustrated how media portrays a story. If you don't like how the story is written, become the story writer.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
I have so many answers. It's wow, become the story writer.
Yeah, these hipsters, man.
I told her it was overly simplistic.
Who's going to give me an opportunity to be the story writer, first of all,
DeRay is being the fucking story writer. That's what his tweets were. And you jumped into him telling his version of the story to tell him he wasn't doing it right. Listen to yourself. You sound like a fucking idiot. You jumped into his actually telling his story to tell him he wasn't doing right. And then you actually have the nerve to say you should become the story writer. But don't say anything I don't agree with because I'm going to come after you for that too. The fuck are you talking about? Ugh.
All right, seriously, guys? I mean, really? The fuck, dude? The fuck? All right.
Seriously. Out of control. She goes on to, of course, then start, you know, saying people are insulting her.
Well, so I start tweeting at her, and then other people do, and so now she feels what? Attacked. In fact, this is the real point of the whole story.
So I see all of this going on. I don't get involved because I really don't have time to talk to white people about supremacy.
Bullshit.
Period. At all. I don't have the bandwidth for it. So I saw this happening, and Drew saw me. Drew says, oh, a bunch of people are, now that he's been looped in, all of his followers are seeing it and stuff like that. He's like, oh, a lot of people are talking to her about it. And I said, oh, it's 3:50. By 3:58, she will say everyone's attacking her. At 3:57, one Glitzy Sky posts. Let me just make sure I have the right one. She says, I never asked for explanation of anyone's every opinion. I asked a question. If you don't see the responses as repetitive, condescending, and insulting, there's no point in talking. Everything can't be attack when someone simply asks a question. 3:57, y'all.
She's delusional.
7 minutes. 7 minutes of being uncomfortable, and she was attacked.
Hangover under is 8 minutes. She came under.
She did come under. I said by
He did say by 358.
I was like, no way she's making it.
And when that tweet came through and she said the word attack three times, I literally just felt like, shit my fucking, I was like, oh my God.
I said, what time is it? You were like, 357. I was like, mm-hmm, exactly. That's how fucking predictable you guys are. It's disgusting. Seriously, attacked. Yeah. I made an infographic actually when all of this Patricia Arquette, Nicole Sandler business happened, because that's actually what the argument was about, was, you know, black people taking offense at what Patricia was talking about at the Oscars and her little speech afterwards about how, you know, it's time for the people of color and LGBT people to, you know, come to stand up for all the white women and them needing to make as much money as white men. And so I made this little infographic about about basically, what was it about, Drew? Oh yeah, it was about
critique doesn't critique, go attack.
Yes, what the definition?
I take of exception with what you just said. Isn't right. Attack?
So I put critique. I disagree with you. This is problematic, and I have issues with what you said. Does not mean attack, 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 attack. Because they just have no fucking idea like what these words mean. They use them.
Yeah, that's, I think we have an episode called White Women You Have No Idea. Shirley goes in on, like, you fucking white women.
Yeah, yeah, you think you're clever. You're not.
You're not clever.
Add to that list people that use the word genocide in regards to the white race.
Oh, God.
That's like an insult to actual genocide.
Yes, please. It's an insult to everybody and everybody's pseudo-intelligence as well. And then she, of course, says, no, he didn't. He did respond. You were all inclined to attack as if I'm the enemy. I'm grown. I've probably been an activist longer than most of you have been alive. She ends her diatribe. She then deleted all of these tweets, blocked anyone that had called her on her bullshit, and then just decided to pretend like nothing had happened.
Because it doesn't exist.
Nope.
Do you mean like she can do that?
Yeah. So, yeah. Thanks for that, Glitzy Sky.
Classy.
Friday's lesson in white fragility.
Mm-hmm. Call that pulling a Sandler.
Yep.
Full on. Pulling a Sandler.
And Drew, the thing is, Drew's tweets were so, like, trying to be nice to her.
Yeah. I was pretty
impolite. Like, you were being all polite. Like, oh, let me break this down for you. Let me do this.
Yeah, even the one where people are jumping on, right? And I said, listen, you asked in a sort of demanding tone. Then you repeated it with more urgency. That's kind of privileged. That's kind of privileged. Yeah. I wasn't like being mean and shit. I was like, that's kind of privileged.
Yeah, you got to kind of see that for what it is right now, because you're coming into a situation where you feel that your opinion is even warranted.
I didn't even get into that, the centering on whiteness in that regard, that, like, you know, here's a black man, a prominent black leader in the Ferguson movement with 60 some odd thousand followers who, you know, probably has a lot going on.
Right.
And he needed you. Right? And, like, you didn't just need to answer you, but, like, you came at him like, is this a hoax? Like, you came all kind of...
Yeah. Like, how dare you? From, this better be legit.
Yeah.
How dare you? But take the narrative back, man. Just don't say anything I disagree with, because otherwise we got problems.
AKA pulling a Nicole Sander.
Yep.
That t-shirt you got that says, even white people are sick of white people bullshit.
Yeah.
Oh, gosh, I love that shirt. It's so good. It's so good.
Mm-hmm. But so that's a way to you know, in terms of Twitter, right? Talk mm-hmm. to people like that. Every time I troll people like that, I gain so many followers. I swear to God, I know why trolls troll. I don't mean to troll. Like, I wasn't like, and I was pretty polite. But every time I do shit like that, just nah. Every time, pick up tons of followers.
Bam.
They're in there for that. So, Drew, you had a quiz you wanted to give Chloe and Shirley, yeah?
It was a secret Canadian quiz. No. I didn't want to spoil it with you guys. So
you guys know I have to leave in the next at least 15 minutes or so.
Oh, my God.
We're almost done. That'll be good.
I have to record the cackle.
It's okay. 4 minutes until 4:30.
Okay.
It's 4 minutes.
You got to leave in 4 minutes?
I'll extend it to 10 minutes.
Okay. 10 right. minutes.
Well, so should be enough time to get there.
Are you sure?
Yeah. Because I have to be there at 5 o'clock.
Okay.
So. Your Canadian currency changes a lot. You guys have special issue currency. You have, like, special currency, this, that. I want to know how well you are familiar with your own currency.
All right.
Okay. We'll start easy. Tell me, who's on the five, on the Canadian Fiver?
Oh, that's shit. I just saw his thing the other day.
What? He's big ass face right on the front. He's bald.
Partially. Yeah.
It's Thomas Sir.
Jefferson. No, I'm kidding.
Sir.
Shit.
He was the prime minister.
Yes.
I don't know these
from
guys.
1896 to 1911. Sir.
Wilfrid Laurier.
Yeah.
Wilfrid Laurier. Did you just look it up?
You better be browsing.
All right. We're gonna make it a little harder. How about the 50? He's on the 50.
What?
Well, ask the 20 first. You guys know who's on the 20.
That's the queen.
The queen. That's right.
Of course. Okay. All right. How about we'll go back to Miggy. Who's on the 10?
Who's on the 10? Who is on the 10? Is that that's not Renee Levesque, is it?
No.
No.
No, another prime minister. 1867 to 73 and 1878 to 1891.
Say that again, the first part?
1867 to 73 and 1878 to 1891.
It's not a British guy, is it?
Sir John.
Is it
a British guy?
Sir John A. MacDonald. I mean, I can't tell. How do you know if they're British? I don't know.
All right, let me ask you this. I'll go easier. Back to the five. Back to the five.
No, what are you going back to the five?
Just, I'm asking the question. What's on the...
It's Sir John A. MacDonald.
Yes, that's it. Uh-huh.
What's on the back of the five Canadian
just
$5 bill?
Back?
Yeah, no, the back? Yeah, Drew, that's harder. The kids playing hockey.
No.
Really? Beaver?
It's got a spaceship and a dude walking. Maybe this is the new currency.
The arm? The whole...
Yeah, the space arm.
That could be... Yes.
From the ISIS.
That is the newest... That's the polymer
that
bills.
Is the new
oh, yeah, that's the new. Bills. I think you got to ask them the Canadian Journey ones, because that's not fair to ask
the
them.
Journey ones change all the time. These are the new bills. They're in circulation. I'm just asking.
Oh, they are in circulation. Yes. No, Drew's right. Yeah.
Okay, all right, so the 100.
It's got an ISIS space arm. And these new polymer bills, we have them too. They're pretty sweet.
Who's on the 100?
You finally have those kind of bills, guys. Nice.
Who is on the brown?
Because it is kind of scary to
the
touch
brown.
Money. It's gross, actually.
No, it's funny.
It's money
gross.
To touch.
No, it's still green. It's still on the it's still on the cotton. It's
yeah,
still, on
still on
that
fiber paper.
But it's got the polymer. Yeah, it's got the shit built
in. Oh my gosh, how many?
It's covered in blood and cocaine.
It's covered,
that's right.
I mean, blood, semen, or cocaine. It's
or all three most of the time.
All right.
Oh, did you say semen?
She did.
Who is on
the brown $100? It's prime minister from 1911 to 1920. He's got a beautiful head of gray hair. Parted
Mulroney?
Down the middle.
Nah.
It's not Mulroney, is it?
They would never. Nope. They would not put Mulroney.
Sir Robert. L. Borden is that one.
No, it's L. Borden, sir. L. Borden.
We rarely see 50s and 100s roaming around, unless you're
Well, I mean, I think that's pretty normal nowadays because everybody uses their bank cards.
Do you have the, what journey do you have right now? Do you have the journey notes? Are you familiar with those?
No.
You said the kid playing hockey. That's the journey notes.
Oh, okay, yeah, then that's
the one you're most familiar with.
That's the one that I remember being the most significant change.
Got it.
Okay. Do you know what's on the back of the 10?
Is it a parliament building?
Some kind of arch. Is that the parliament building? Looks like a woman with some binoculars looking at an arch.
Yeah, it says in the service of peace.
Oh, my God.
No. Dude, this is a terrible quiz.
Their currency's tough.
It's confusing, man. Looks like Monopoly money.
Right, that's all I've got was currency questions. They're all tough.
It's all too tough. Too tough.
Too hard.
Well, let's let everyone know one more time.
Not as fixated about money as you are.
Yeah. Well, ours are pretty static, so yeah.
Hold on a second.
She did get me there.
I don't think I've had a $100 bill in my pocket in years.
I love currency from other lands. I collect it. Not really. I just like having it because I think it looks cool.
It does look cool.
So back to the five is a hockey, but that's changed.
That's changed.
Yeah, that was the journey, and now you guys have the new polymers.
And it's got the arm, the space arm. Mm-hmm. Canada arm 2. And Dextra. And the back of the 10 now is the Canadian, the train.
Okay. And the CN?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And the back of the
high-speed
20
train.
Is the Canadian Monument Vimy Memorial.
Okay. Not Celine Dion. Canadian. Okay.
No, not Celine Dion. The back of the 50 is the CCGS Amundsen, the research icebreaker.
It's a ship.
The back of the 100 is innovative, medical, just generally medical innovation, apparently insulin. I don't know if that was that. Did a Canadian? Just,
you guys invented insulin? Sweet.
And they also have the
You're
the,
welcome.
Thank you, man.
There's a Canada. There's a maple leaf at the end of a double helix. So apparently something to do with DNA. I don't know.
And like a microscope, like a big electron
but
microscope.
But it's a woman looking in the microscope. It so is that's, a woman. You know,
yeah, there was, I think there was some religious folks that were upset with that $100 bill.
Oh, really?
Really?
Yeah.
Because of DNA.
Because they were all like, it's so sciencey. Where's, I see a lot of science on these bills. Where's the God?
Oh, hilarious.
Well, you've got women on 2 out of 6 of your bills. That's pretty badass.
The queen doesn't count. She's not a woman. She's the queen.
She's a troll.
She's badass.
She's a troll.
I think you got to respect the fact that she's gone through all that bullshit.
You can respect her as bullshit, much as you want, Shirley.
I just, I never think of,
don't hate the player.
I don't think of Canada as a British protectorate. To put the queen on. I don't know,
I don't know why she's still there, though.
Because you're still under her liege.
It's kind of like when you name your kids after people you know. You kind of owe them a little bit.
We need some First Nation people on those bills.
Yes, we do.
Yeah, well, there's a big push here to put women, a woman on the $20 bill and get rid of that fuck not Andrew Jackson that's on ours. And so that's been a lot of talk. I think there's even a poll going on right now. People are really pushing to get a woman on the 20, and people are voting to say who they want. Unfortunately, one of the suggestions is fucking disgusting and just disturbing to me. The white people. Margaret Sanger, she's the birth control pioneer and one of the founders of Planned Parenthood. She's also a racist and eugenicist.
Nice.
Someone told me that that isn't necessarily true.
Whoever told you that's a damn liar. Just letting you know right now. She is a full-on and admitted. She used to give her talks at KKK meetings for the women of the KKK.
Holy shit.
There you go.
So I don't know who told you that. I'm sure it was a white woman, and she's a damn liar.
I have a hard time believing that your money's going to change like that. Like I think Canada knows. Like if you ask me who's on the bills in the U.S., I'd probably know more.
Maybe. Sure. Nobody gives a shit.
I love that you
Jackson
got rid of the dollar, though. They got ones, loonies, and twoies. Like, I'd love for us to have a dollar coin and a $2 coin. That'd be awesome.
I thought the U.S. tried that a while ago. I saw this, like, video, this propaganda video about how awesome it would be to move to U.S. coins.
Well, the lifespan.
The coins are awesome.
In terms of the cost to produce and then the lifespan of the product, like, bills are out of circulation within so many months, whereas coins can be in circulation for many, many years. Yeah. And so it's much more cost effective to produce coins versus bills, and the most number of bills we produce and in circulation are the dollar bill. So it'd make a lot of sense, like economically, fiscally.
But I think that's idea of the American dollar. They wouldn't be down with that.
And it would be,
people are stupid.
It would be much easier for the government to be like, we're doing it. Bank cost savings. Click, we're going to do it. Here you go.
Yeah, like that's ever stopped America or made them do anything. Cost savings.
I'm going to start hoarding dollars.
Yeah, just a few quotes from Margaret Sanger before we let Charlay go. This was in a letter to Clarence Gable in 1939 regarding a birth control clinic that they were opening in Harlem. Quote, "We do not want word to get out that we want to exterminate the Negro population. And the minister is the man who can straighten out that idea if it ever occurs to any of their more rebellious members." End quote. In her publishing of What Every Girl Should Know, Sexual Impulses, Part 2, she says, "Original Australians, quote, were just a step higher than chimpanzees, end quote, with, quote, little sexual control as compared to the normal man and woman."
Yes!
And finally,
I went from smiling to what?
My face got all sour like I just ate a lemon.
Mm-hmm. And finally, in the Birth Control Review in April of 1932, she said, "Birth control must lead ultimately to a cleaner race," end quote.
Wow. Oh,
so, yeah.
That's some seriously racist stuff. Like, she's manipulating stuff.
She was on that final plan bullshit. Like, no joke.
Yeah, that's some eugenicist shit.
It is. Really, she's a eugenicist. She considers herself one, and one of her mentors is one of the leading eugenicist people that was involved with Darwin's experiments as well, FYI.
How can you vote for something like that? Like, how can you say, like, this is a legitimate thing?
Because that's not what they think. They're like, oh, she was she went for women's liberation. She wanted women to be in control of their sexuality and their ability to give birth or to not give birth, which she was for white women. And so when I point this shit out, they're like, whoa, I never knew that. And they say it as though like it's my job to educate them about shit that they're trying to fucking promote. Yeah. Like, what the fuck? How about you do a little goddamn research every now and then? Yeah, I tell people all the time.
Talking about?
Like, challenge what you think you know about shit, because it's all steeped in white supremacy and it's all bullshit, at least in some part, because of that. So how about you, whatever they said, why don't you question a little bit more instead of coming to my mentions trying to tell me about how great fucking Margaret Sanger was. Man, fuck you. Okay. So please, before you guys leave, tell us again where everybody can find you so that they know and can get in touch with you.
You can find us.
I thought I was going to stick around.
Oh, cool. Okay, great.
Yeah, I was thinking, like, you just throw Clove under the fucking bus.
Well, Charlay, before you nod off then. So, yeah. So, Charlay, tell us your Twitter handle just so they have that before you have to.
My Twitter handle is Shirasaurus, like a dinosaur. Mm-hmm. No. Shirasaurus. You can Google the show. Just Google Chonilla, Chonilla, to find us on all sorts of social media channels and everything else. And yeah, tweet me.
Tweet her.
Like, but not hardcore, like true.
No, but Shirley actually does Twitter. Clove is like, he comes in once a week. He's like, Sunday night, let me tweet for a minute. Okay, sweet. I'm out. But Shirley actually tweets. I give her credit for
this. The bathroom session here is taking a little longer than I expected. Let me go on Twitter and see what's going on.
Bathroom session. You're tweeting Clove, he's in the bathroom.
Usually taking a shit.
Awesome. Yeah. Drew tweets everywhere, so there's no off.
I'm going to get you. You're going to respond to something like, oh, dude, Clove's live dumping. He's live dumping.
He's doing it, guys.
You should do a hashtag, live dumping.
Live dump.
And sploosh, hashtag live dumping.
Living that bowl life. Do you guys have bidets in Canada? Are you a bidet country?
My grandmother used to have a bidet.
Drew has a bidet.
I'm cleaner than you, dude. Cleaner than you. I wash my butt. It's greener, too. I don't use half as much toilet paper. True. I don't use any toilet paper at all.
Very true.
We'll be out of toilet paper for days. I'm like, fuck you need toilet paper for? Wash your butt.
That's a direct result of us living abroad, too.
I would love that.
Is it really?
Yeah, he got used to the bidet, and he was like, I can't fuck around with this. I need a bidet.
Well, what, though? When you have three kids, toilet paper, especially when you have a teenager, goes really fast. So I'm starting to think this is probably not a bad idea.
Bidets are a great idea.
Bidets are awesome.
I don't know why people started thinking it became a bad idea.
Yeah, I don't know what the shame about it is.
It's a scam with the paper companies, man.
It is.
Oh, my God. It
is. Some of these, like, Japanese ones where they heat the fucking water up and it's got, like, a wave cycle and it's got, like, bursts and shit pressure.
And my room was the size of, like, I mean, it was the size of just the bed, a tiny TV, and air purifier because everybody in Japan smokes, so you have to kind of, like, have it running all the time.
It's gross.
The bathroom was so small that the sink faucet just moved over to the tub to be the tub faucet. But the toilet had like 50,000 buttons on it, and you could change the temperature of the water and the angle of the water and the way it sprayed and the heat of it.
You could program the music and chime that it plays when you fucking...
Literally.
We started like, oh, do-do-do-do-do-do-do.
It opened and closed on its own. Literally. That's how serious they are about it.
Toto 5000.
Serious.
The gold standard.
I guess a lot of time is spent in the toilet over there they need it to be that comfortable.
Well, I think they have like a lot of like stuff about like just health and your gastrointestinal health too, because they also have toilets that you're meant to use standing up. It's supposed to be like a better position for you to expel things.
Do we have to say goodbye to Shirley though?
Oh yeah,
yes, I have to go.
So we love you. To see you. We love you. We'll talk to you soon.
Love you guys. Thanks. Bye.
Beat it.
Oh, my dastardly plan to have more than one white guy and only one black woman now complete.
It's perfect. Coming up, white man. Finally, we're getting a break.
We're getting a break, finally.
Turning the tide on the genocide.
So the other thing I wanted to talk about, too, was one of our UU brethren, Kenny Wiley, who's an amazing writer. So for people who don't know about Unitarian Universalists, I don't know how much you know about it, clove, if anything.
Should have better, this is better for Shirley of the 17 different religions.
Sure, maybe she went to a UU church. Anyway, so UU is not a theological-based religion. It's based on a set of seven principles, which are derived in some parts, certainly from many religious teachings, and kind of talk about just what we believe as human beings. So there are seven principles. The first principle is the inherent worth and dignity of every person. The second one is justice, equity, and compassion in human relations. The third is acceptance of one another and encouragement to spiritual growth in our congregations. The fourth is a free and responsible search for truth and meaning. The fifth is the right of conscience and the use of the democratic process within our congregations and in society at large. The sixth is the goal of world community of with peace, liberty, and justice for all. And the seventh is respect for the interdependent web of all existence of which we are all a part. Okay, so you would think, given those principles, that the Black Lives Matter movement would be, I don't know, kind of speaks to a lot of those principles that are
certainly
out there.
Certainly that first one.
Certainly the first one, the inherent worth and dignity of every part. Of every person. So I left my church here because the opposite is true. And we are often hearing, as we will from most, a lot of liberal progressive circles, you know, the all lives matter and, you know, can we all just love each other and all of these kind of.
Even
you know,
the UU's current, they've as a, there's a governing body of some sort. There's like a, you know, national. Whatever, Unitarian Universalist Association, and they had a campaign before Black Lives Matter, before Ferguson, and they've been sticking with it, and it's like standing on the side of love.
Yeah.
And even that's like, you know, could you be more non-committal and vague about, you know, can you just make a statement about Black Lives? Like, why do you have to like standing on the side of love? And mm-hmm. This whole narrative of like, well, if we just love everybody, we're all human race. It, you know, I don't think most white people see how much that erases black reality. And, mm-hmm. and that's just, it's just, it's almost cruel and unfair. And especially in a church like a, you know, I don't say especially, but a Unitarian Universalist church where they do in every other thing they discuss, breathe, think, and feel, they're aware and conscious of, you know, the needs of LGBT community, the needs of the elderly, the needs of the less economically advantaged, the needs of the, you know, illiterate, needs of the deaf, or the blind. Like they're more than accommodating in so many ways.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and very sensitive to those things.
Yeah.
But when it comes to, you know, Black Lives Matter and people of color in their congregations, like they don't want to hear it. I mean, it's because, uh-huh. you know, and this is the same of, you know, I think a lot of white people, especially progressive white people, is that they really, they don't like feeling bad. None of us do. But at the same token, they also don't want to go to that place where this is going to mean them confronting something about themselves, mm-hmm. where they have to admit that they are participatory in the way that things are now, because they like to see themselves like, you know, I marched, or I'm not a racist, or I'm this, I'm not that. And it's like, yes, you can be, all of those things can be true, and you still benefit from this situation. You still benefit from the fact that, you know, people of color in this country are treated badly because of their color only. And
but even sorry to jump in, but even if it were true, like what she's saying about like how dedicated she is for the cause, she doesn't see how whack it is to play a card like that.
Yep. It's so whack. It's ridiculous and completely undermined. So Kenny has been a big force in our religion in pushing Black Lives Matter. He really, you know, he is a senior editor with the religious magazine that is associated with Unitarian Universalist, UUA World. And he also works at the local church there. He's a youth minister there. So, you know, he's very connected with the church, and he has been. He was born and raised a Unitarian Universalist. His father is a minister in the church.
Right.
So, you know, he's very, you know, active, and it's not something he's going to turn away from. Like me, like I was just like, you know what, fuck this, I'm out. I'm still a Unitarian Universalist, but I've had to cultivate community with other Unitarian Universalists that feel the same way that I do, versus trying to force people here to do that, because I don't have the bandwidth to try and like tell you all this shit. I just don't. I don't have the energy for it. And Drew's tried some. I don't. So
yeah, and just getting into that, like just allowing someone to engage you in that way. Do you know what I mean? It's kind of like, it's weird. Like, there has to be a lot of trust there. There has to be, like, it can't just be a random person saying, I don't get black people. Right. Can some black person explain it to me?
Yes.
You know what I mean? And it's not up to black people to you know, push each other out of the way, to trip over themselves, to explain it to this person.
Right. Mm. And it becomes very, like, you know, detrimental and harmful. Yeah. It's abusive to some put your, level. Yeah, it is, to put somebody in that position. So,
And, you know, quite frankly, though, like, when it comes to these kinds of, like, social matters, a lack of education on someone's part shouldn't, you know, intrude on the way things need to progress.
Nope. Not in this day and age. Y'all got Google.
And the you know, the thing that always happens, and I've seen it happen, and it plays out, is that the dynamic's primarily white. You know, the first two people of color, or, you know, two Latina, whatever, you know, some marginalized or some individual that's not normally represented in that church sets foot in the door, and it's instantly, oh, thank God we have someone like you here. Now we have a voice for insert, you know, whatever group that we didn't have representation for.
Or the opposite.
And let's put you on a committee. And
yeah. Or the opposite.
An outsider voice now.
Right. Or the opposite, which I felt like was more with me, where people, like, had gotten themselves to, like, they forgot I was black. And it was like, oh, why do you care about this? Like, that was how I perceived it to be towards me. It was like, why are you talking about all this stuff? It's like, maybe you hadn't noticed, but I'm black. My whole family's black. Like, yeah, it kind of affects me. So that's why I'm talking about it.
You had a real life like Jace move. Didn't know you were black.
No, I mean, obviously they knew I was, but I think that was the approach of it. It was like, oh, well, we love Leslie, but not if she's going to be acting like she's black. Like, mm-hmm. That's the way that it was, not acting in terms of
that's
my.
That's why you bought that T-shirt.
I did. I'm gonna wear it to the movies tonight too. We'll see what happens.
Are you seriously?
I am gonna wear it tonight.
Should I wear my white people sick of white people bullshit?
You can if you want to.
I'm strut our stuff.
The shirt I'm wearing, it says I'm not a respectable Negro. So we'll see what happens at the movie theater tonight. We're gonna go see Insurgent. Boop. So
I think it's important that, you know, like, when this is being communicated, that you can't just make it about, like, you can't surface it and say that it's about skin color. What it is that there's a certain demographic of people that are affected in a negative way by another demographic of people, and you're choosing not to see this.
Yep.
Yeah.
You're choosing to say that it's okay as is. The status quo is okay, but it's clearly unbalanced.
Absolutely.
And I that's why when I debate people, I always get to that point really quick. You're like, well, let's just talk about the outcome. You see this outcome. Are you saying that this outcome isn't true, that we don't arrest black people and put them in jail, you know, X times more numbers, this and that, but despite having the same, you know, habits when it comes to drugs and other things, you're not doubting that? Oh, okay. So why is that? There's only so many answers. Either it's
And your refusal to look and incorporate evidence into your worldview is problematic for everybody, because you're in a position that you're now halting progress.
Mm. Mm-hmm. And it's funny, because that's really Kenny's piece really dives deep into that concept, right, of stopping progress for the sake of your own, you know, protection, comfort, so to speak. Mm-hmm. And he talks about how, you know, he strives in his community to be a racial justice activist. And whenever he's introduced, he says that, you know, his faith is what calls him to do that. And deep down, he's been being like, wait, does it? Does it really? Does Unitarian Universalist really make me heed this call? I'm not so sure. And right. He says his doubts remain because of the hateful and or ignorant comments some Unitarian Universalists have sent my way since I joined the racial justice movement. The doubts remain because of the silence and seeming indifference I've felt from some of my fellow UUs, even as others have gotten quite involved. And so he kind of delved into the history of Unitarian Universalism to create his own Black Lives Matter theology, because it was really hard for him to reconcile this, you know, hanging of everything on our first principle, you know, the inherent worth and dignity of every person, and reconciling this with the treatment that he's been receiving from not just, you know, people in his own congregation who literally walked up to him and said, I think the exact quote was, you know, it's really enough with all of this race stuff now.
Right.
You know, to somebody who had just gotten up and in front of the entire congregation gave a, you know, an impassioned sermon about Black Lives Matter and what it means to him and all of this stuff. And it's like, dude, really? That's what you got out of this? That you felt that it was okay for you to walk up to me and say that to my face here in our church? Are you fucking kidding me right now?
Yeah, I've been within earshot of white people saying, like, oh, here we go, another black person talking about race. Yeah.
Which is crazy to me. So you're saying talking about race is worse than racism.
Right.
Just to be clear, because that's basically what you're trying to say. That's the problem.
What you're saying is that everyone needs to be aware of your sensibilities.
Yeah. But you don't have to be aware of anybody
else. Well, that's the ultimate assumption,
too. You don't recognize that as being in a privileged position.
Right. Absolutely. So he draws a conclusion that, like the Declaration of Independence and the preamble of the Constitution, the first principle of Unitarian Universalism stands as an unrealized promise. It's a map of the work done centuries and decades ago and a map of the work yet to do. The first principle operates as what UU and Harvard Divinity Professor Dan McCann calls radical hope. Radical hope, McCann writes, transcends the institutions of present-day society, but it does not transcend the laws of physical or human nature. It looks to the future, not to heaven. And so he draws this whole theology that comes together with it, but he finishes up so strongly. He talks about a bunch of UUs that are doing work within the Black Lives Matter movement. He says, right now, we as Unitarian Universalists are being called to act. We are being called by our ancestors, those who insisted, who demanded that we help end slavery, that we fight for suffrage, that we join the struggle to end Jim Crow, and that we listen to and honor Black power. He says, guided by that principle, that enduring, unfulfilled promise of the belief in the inherent worth and dignity of every person, ours is a faith that has said or worked to say to those who have been marginalized, you are a woman and your life still matters just the same. You are gay or lesbian and your life matters just the same. You are transgender and your life matters just the same. You have a disability and your life matters just the same. You are not loved as a child and your life matters just the same. You struggle with depression and your life matters just the same. Right now, we are being called by our ancestors, by our principals, by young Black activists around the country to promote and affirm. You are young and Black, and your life matters just the same. You stole something, and your life matters just the same. I have been taught to fear you, and your life matters just the same. The police are releasing your criminal record, and your life matters just the same. They are calling you a thug, and your life matters just the same. Wayne Aronson said, the way is often hard, the path is never clear, and the stakes are high. Take courage, for deep down, there is another truth. You are not alone. Our ancestors, principals, and fellow humans are calling on us to promote, affirm, with deeds and words, Black Lives Matter, just the same. Oh, Kenny, God bless you. Mm-hmm. I love him. I just thought it was really well put together, especially where he calls, you know, really highlights all of these different causes that I have seen in action, and even in our local congregation, people fighting for all of these rights, whether it be women's rights with regard to health care and birth control and all of that kind of stuff, whether it be people with mental disabilities, maybe, you know, or ableist issues, or certainly LGBT. They're huge, you know, push for marriage equality here in New Jersey that ended up working and getting pushed through the courts here. So I think it was really smart of him to phrase it in the way that UUs understand, like, you guys have already done all of this shit. Why is this not the same? Right. And if it's not the same to you, then you need to be upfront and confront those things within yourself that's allowing that to be kind of live inside of you in that regard.
Have you heard of a guy named Sam Harris?
I think you mentioned him to me before.
Yeah, he's got a very similar kind of view on the way to approach like a kind of like a moral worldview.
Mm-hmm.
And he kind of bases it on the whole, like, if you can at least concede that there's a big difference in the way people are treated around the world, then you can also kind of draw a line and say, like, this is more moral than that. And why are we not aiming towards a more moral society?
Mm.
Do you know what I mean? So where you draw the line is different for everybody. Like the atrocities that you see on TV for, you know, like the white racist, he sees the atrocities, you know, happening to two different races. He obviously empathizes more with, you know, the white side of things, but he can draw a line. That's the thing. And anybody, if you can draw that line between what is more moral in a situation, then we should be aiming for a better society. And this sounds very much like what Sam Harris is talking about as well.
Yeah, for sure. Definitely does. I'll put link to Kenny's article, so you can read the actual theology part of it, because he went back to, through the history and pulled some historical data in terms of work that has been done and when it was pushed back from different congregations about work that needed to be done. So it was a really great piece that he put together.
And he spoke a lot to just like specifically within UUism. You know, there's this whole, I won't say narrative, but a lot of our faith relies on, oh, we did a lot of work in the 60s. We marched in Selma because James Reeb got killed. Yeah. And like, you know, famously it was in the movie Selma, like a Unitarian Universalist did get killed, and that did galvanize a lot of Unitarian Universalists.
Two of them, because you know, two Unitarian Universalists got killed. One was a minister and one was
Thank you for the correction.
Sorry.
So it galvanized that you know, religious base, and certainly, you know, to that same effect, it's sort of like, well, why did all of these white Unitarian Universalists care? They didn't care when Martin Luther King and SNCC made their call.
They cared once the white person died. They didn't care when Jimmie Lee Jackson was killed, which is why the call went out.
Correct.
And the people that came is because they worked in black communities. They worked in urban areas where they felt a connection to the black people that they knew. And they were like, dude, I can't just sit around. This does affect people that I love and know and
care
about.
Well, that was one person and two people that did that. You know, the first wave of UUs that we got, James Reeb,
that James got
maybe
killed
like
in,
a dozen, you know, total. But so the narrative has been, well, we as a faith have done this, so we are moral, just, good people, and you know, we're older, we did our thing, and you know, we don't have to worry. We, you know, we took care of that. We don't have to worry about that stuff now.
Right.
Why are you bringing it up?
Right.
And it's a narrative that's incorrect in a lot of ways.
Yeah, sure. And there's also the straw man of like, well, it's not as bad as it used to be, so we're doing a good job.
Yes, totally.
It's like, if you see that it's broken in other places, continue the work.
Yeah,
exactly. I'm gonna write I was thinking of this, and I actually did it on a just in a thread in the RUU Awake group. Of course, Clove, I created my own splinter UU group online. We're some 800 strong now. It's a lot of us in there fighting a good fight. But I wrote this whole thing about how I can tie Black Lives Matter directly to all 7 UU principles and why I feel each of them means that every UU should be involved in the Black Lives Matter movement. So I might make a little infographic with that, the 7 principles of Black Lives Matter. I'm going to work on that.
I like it.
Yeah. So we want to talk about TVs and movies. Do you guys watch Blackish? I don't know if you do or not.
Yes, we do.
Oh, you get our TV up there? Sweet.
Of course they do. What do you think?
I don't know.
Everybody gets our TV everywhere. Oh, I just sounded like my mom when I said that. Wow.
what's the ethnocentric there? Xenocentric? Whatever that is?
I don't think Canadians are xenocentric.
You were saying that everybody gets our TV. Like, well, our TV's
no. No, I don't say that because of anything other than that we're obnoxious and try to infiltrate everywhere we can.
Oh, okay.
It's not a good thing.
TV colonization?
Yeah, I don't think it's a good thing.
Like, Canadian TV is pretty – it's very patriotic. It's very Canadian. And there seems to be like some kind of flow that speaks to Canadian people. I don't get it. I don't know why. But it's I definitely look for more American-based programming.
What would be – patriotic flow for Canadian show. Help me out here. What does that mean?
It's kind of like let's see. Well, a lot of the shows that come out of Canada are backed with like government money, like with grants and things like that, to promote like the arts and things like that.
Oh, you're talking like Degrassi Next.
Yeah, things like that.
Yeah,
and there's definitely like, I don't know. Maybe it's because maybe it's all in my brain, but there definitely seems to be, when I'm watching Canadian television, there's a flavor there that I can't put my finger on, but it's just like, I don't know what it is.
Did you get hockey in there, Jimmy? Did you get hockey? You got to mention hockey more times.
Well, I think they're definitely, because I've watched a few Canadian things. Like, we watch Orphan Black is a really good,
That's a British.
No, it's from BBC America, but it's a Canadian, like, it's in Canada. That's the company that makes it in Canada. So it is a Canadian television show. The producers and everybody that makes it, they're Canadian. And
I like that show.
The writers and directors are all Canadian. But there is a flavor to it where it's like, even in that show, that's kind of dark and it's, you know, has violence and stuff, but it's just like, it's pulled back a bit. Like, there's almost a naivete to the approach of violence even. Like, it's not gory or realistic in some ways. Like, I don't know how to describe
it. You're talking like 1970s Tom and Jerry versus 2000 Tom and Jerry.
No, not even that. Just it's very... I hear what you're saying, that there is a thread through it that signifies it's not American. I'll say that to it.
Right.
So you can tell.
There is a movie called Bon Cop, Bad Cop. And that means good cop, bad cop.
Okay. Thank you for that.
You're welcome.
Because I don't know if we could have deciphered bon cop, bad cop. Might have been hard to get that idiom. The French move. Whew.
Right. But if you watch this movie, this is probably the most Canadian movie I've ever seen. So it's a story about two cops, like a buddy cop story, and they're going after a serial killer. But everything about it, the production, the everything, it just it's Canada.
We're going to have to live tweet Bone Cop, Bad Cop at some point.
Yes.
Bad Cop. Yeah, bad, that's what we're at right here.
Bad Bone Cop, Bad Cop.
Bad Cop, Worst Cop. That's what we're at here. Yeah. So hey, we watched Blackish, and Drew, what were you talking about, this white guy? That's right.
When Anthony Anderson's character, what's his name? I can't remember. Anyway.
Dre. He loses his basketball team. He needs to play on a new
No, game. He hurts himself. Yeah. So they suggest he should be playing with some white people. His wife does, Tracy Ellis Ross character. So he starts playing with all these white dudes at his office, and the one black dude that's also at his office comes out, and he's like, dude, what the fuck are you doing, man? You're trying to take my white team. This is my white guy team.
And awesome. I love that character.
Yeah, so he says, but the best part, he goes, this is my white guy team. He goes, it's my ticket to hockey tickets, nighttime dentists, the cure for AIDS, and the black seat on the space arc when the world ends.
That's all the things he gets.
His list.
This is my white guy team. He was very protective of us.
Nighttime dentists, cure for AIDS, hockey tickets.
So the other thing we want to talk about is, I don't know if you knew this, Clove, but Drew was very close. I would say, you know, one of his best friends from childhood ended up being a mass murderer. I think it was multiple. I don't know which it is, but he killed multiple people.
Come on.
Yeah, when they were 16 years old. And
you were friends with him when you guys were 16
he held the murder weapon. That's how close they were. He didn't know it was a murder weapon at the time, but
At what age did this guy commit these murders?
16.
No, he was under 16. It was like
15 and a half. You guys, but that was the year you turned 16, Drew.
Correct.
Yes.
So he had murdered these people and you were hanging out with him. Like, he was currently a murderer.
Drew, yeah,
he lived at the block from me. He committed the murders, and it was maybe 7 months. I thought it was longer. I thought it was like a year and a bit, but it might have only been 7 months between the murders and when they arrested him. But it was more than like a couple of weeks.
Holy shit. Wow. You were like BFS with a serial killer.
I was BFS when we were maybe like third, fourth, fifth grade before, you know, eight, nine, ten, like much younger.
And okay, then, when he was arrested, were you all like, yeah, makes sense?
Oh, totally. Absolutely.
Okay.
So, and we'll go into the murder in a minute, but I'll just give his backstory. His name's Dave Biro, and he's in jail rest of his life. He got, right now, Illinois is not executing people, but at the time, Illinois wasn't executing children. They since passed a law that allows them to execute children that commit certain heinous crimes, of which David
is that Bureau spelled B-U-R-E-A-U?
B-I-R-O. David B-I-R-O. And you could do like killing and then put in like Winnetka, W-I-N-N-E-T-K-A. So he lived up the road from me. And we were really good buddies when we were like, you know, like I said, like third, fourth, fifth grade, riding our bikes around town. Like, we get into mischief. Like, he was like a Pete, right? You know, we'd get shoot BB guns and
let's not put Pete in the same category. Serial killers.
He was anyway, but we would get into trouble. We'd like, you know, put fireworks out and shit. Like, we were just, you know, having mischief. So we were doing shit like that, like shooting out street lights with a BB gun and stuff. And I think somewhere in like the sixth grade, so I don't know how old that is, but sixth grade, he had another friend that wasn't in town anymore. That was this friend Jamie moved, and Dave and I became closer because Jamie was no longer in town. So Jamie comes back to visit like a parent that was divorced or something, and he's in town. And all of a sudden, now Dave is like, "Well, I'm going to hang out with Jamie." I'm like, "Okay, fine, whatever." And that week or weekend, it was barely like 4 or 5 days. Him and Jamie were together. They fucking got into like, they amped the mischief up way, 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 way too much. Like, lit fire, like set like a train station on fire, or set like a newspaper box in a train station on fire, stole like a moped, did a bunch of like crazy shit. And it all came to light because he, according to, I guess, his parents and other sources, whatever, attempted to kill his parents. He had poisoned the milk. you put like wood grain thinner or wood grain alcohol in the milk, and they smelled it and could tell it was kind of funny. And they're like, oh, what the hell? So, and like this moped that he had stolen was like in his basement kind of thing. Like this happens, and it's like, the fuck, dude? Like, that's crazy. And he gets sent to like a, I guess like a boys' home, like a,
A mental institution.
Yeah, kind of like it was an institution. I don't know if it was mental, but I'm sure there was therapists and doctors and people that were there.
It was
like
meant
with
to
him.
Keep you away from the population.
It was meant to keep him away from the population.
Keep it real.
And because it's a rich ass little like Winnetka town, they weren't like all like, you know, crazy with pressing charges. And his parents weren't going to, you know, attempted homicide. They weren't going to press charges for that. But so he's in this institution, and over the course of about a year and a half, he gets more and more, you know, like flexibility and freedom to the point where he's allowed to go walk outside. You know, hey, you can go for a walk outside. And he walks all the way home, walks like 20 miles home or something. And he gets home and his parents are like, you know, the fuck? You're supposed to be at this institution. Like, what the hell? And I know this because there's a lawsuit that they lost, a $41 million wrongful death lawsuit for this specific decision they made right here. They called the institute and said, hey, Dave came home. Is he supposed to be home? And they're like, no, he's not supposed to be home. We recommend that he come back here until he's 21. You know, he should be supervised until he's 21. You know, he's not, we do not recommend that he be home at all. And he's a sociopath. So he convinced and talked his parents into letting him stay home. And they did. And I don't think it was maybe, that might have been, so he went away somewhere in like the sixth grade and he came back somewhere like in the eighth grade and he committed the murders somewhere after like, you know, his freshman year. So like a year and a half after he'd come home from this incident. And his dad called me and said, you know, hey, Dave's going to come back. And he was in this, you know, mental place. And
he needs your support.
Didn't he give you guys a speech about it? Not a speech. He just asked us not to like turn our back on him. Yeah,
not to ostracize him.
Yeah.
And then you guys, if I recall correctly, you went to play paintball with him and then decided that you were all going to just shoot him only.
No, that's after he was being a dick. So he was always so like, don't ostracize him. Like I wouldn't say I tried to be friends with him, but he was, you know, you go away for a year and a half and you're a sociopath, you get like more sociopathic.
Yeah. And you want to be fair too. I mean, some people are just difficult to be friends with. Like they, like, I think that's what you're saying. They bring a lot of baggage to the,
sure,
to the relationship. And it's just, it's hard.
Well, so here's, and I'll give you all his friends. So he comes back and we're, you know, kind of not really close again, but we're, you know, we see each other. We're still kind of up the block from one another.
Yeah, and, I'm really familiar to that, you know, that a friend triangle, because I think every boy goes through something like that where, you know, you think you got a friend and they're friends with this guy and it's like,
yeah.
All
right. So anyway, we're in school now and he does a bunch of weird shit. Like he tried to run for office and like, when says something like, who do I got to, like, whose dick do I got to fucking suck around here to get elected? Like, he did all sorts of weird stuff that people are like, he's trying to get popularity. And he's kind of, and it's a huge school. I went to school with like 3,000 people. Like, that was just my graduating class. So he's kind of, you know, just obscure and kind of himself and weird. And, you know, it is what it is. And I knew him and we kind of had other friends that kind of knew each other and would see each other here and there. But there's two things that I personally, and I'm not, I guess maybe I should own some responsibility, that I was involved with. So the Mormon we were talking about before that no longer talks to me, he and I would invite him over to play cards and fleece him. So we'd like, hey, come play fucking hearts. And we'd like, you know, like you're not supposed to be like on each other's team, but like if I have the queen of spades and I'm going to fucking ding somebody, give me David, not the friend that I'm playing with. So we did that. I own that. I did that. So we'd invite him to play like hearts or spades and we'd, you know, kind of like collude to make him the loser. And we went to play paintball one time and he comes out in like scrubs, like bright green scrubs. Like I guess he thought that was going to like
blend in.
It just made him stand out. And we didn't decide to do what Leslie said until we're playing a game and the game ends and he kept firing and someone even had their like goggles or mask off and he kept shooting the person and like, the fuck, what are you doing, come on, what the fuck, like it's, you know, it's over. And right. So then everyone's like, okay, let's get him back, we're gonna play like assassin, you're the assassin, but we're all gonna just go out and fucking shoot you later, like, you know what I mean? Like, so he went out by himself and we all just fucking went out like blah 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 with the paint gun, and I guarantee you he had that gun. He had already committed the murders by the time.
By that time that happened.
We lit him up. We shot him like 30 times with paint bullets. Like,
y'all lucky. Bah, 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 bah. Lucky he didn't kill one of you
idiots. And he was cussing us out and all fucking mad and shit. And I guarantee you he had that gun in his bag. Guarantee it.
Oh my God.
And there was like 12 of us, 13 of us, right? And so at one other point when we were fleecing him for cards, I'm at his house and I think maybe I might have been driving and he wasn't by that time. So maybe I was.
Yeah, because you're a little older than him. That sounds about right.
And we're in the same grade though.
Right, but you're a December baby. Correct.
And he got arrested like March of that year. So I might have been, it might have been those months between I got my license in December. Because you're right, the day I got. Well, the day I turned 16 in December, I got my license that same day. So I'm at his house. I'm sure that was I'm picking him up to go play cards. And he shows me this gun. And I'm holding it. It's a fucking, you know, a revolver, like a Magnum something or other, like a pretty sizable gun. And I might even, like, spun the barrel and looked at it and dry-fired it. It's a fucking goddamn murder weapon. I won't touch a handgun to this day. I don't fuck with handguns. Don't touch them. Because I held a weapon that killed three people. It's ridiculous.
Oh, my God.
So, anyways, the murder itself, he decided he wanted to commit the perfect murder. So, he just picked Rent, followed to a random couple. The woman was pregnant and her husband from the grocery store, and cut a hole in using a glass cutter in their sliding glass door, went into the house while they were at the grocery store. And then when they got home, he murdered them execution style, both of them.
Oh, my God.
And the... cops had no idea who did it. So I'll let Drew pick up the story here, because that's really what you wanted to talk about. Was we watched this video, this TV show called Stolen Voices, Buried Secrets, and it was about this incident. We happened to be looking it up for some other reason the other day, and I go, holy shit, Drew, there's an entire episode of this show about Dave Bierl's murders. And so we watched the show.
Well, and I don't know if we're going to talk about the show or the murders, but he killed them both. And it was at my understanding of what had gone down. It was interesting. I had two pieces of information incorrect that were deliberately incorrect from the police. And one of them, they said, this is the first time on this show we're now releasing this information and telling you, you know, we held this back deliberately so that when we did get someone who knew this, we'd know that they really knew the murder. Because it was like, you know what I'm saying? Like the police do all the time. They hold key pieces of information out of the public domain so that they can verify the veracity of certain statements.
Yes.
So we're watching the show and I'm like, oh man, I can't believe I thought this when it really wasn't that. But so the police had no clue. They didn't know who it was. They like investigated. So they worked at a coffee company. So they thought maybe they were shipping drugs. For some reason, they had one of the women, the woman that died, Nancy Langert, had a sister that had some sort of vague connection with the IRA. So they were investigating the IRA.
I mean, like, literally, they were looking at anywhere but at Dave Bierl.
Anywhere but at Dave Bierl.
Is it called Written in Blood?
Yeah, that's
the show.
It.
Yeah, totally.
Stolen Voices, Buried Secret, that's Written
it.
Blood.
Written that's in it. Blood, that's written it. Blood.
So she had...
I'm watching that later, eh?
Okay. So she had written something in her own blood on an upturned bookcase that I always assumed was Biro, B-I-R-O, and they misinterpreted it for IRA, and that's why they were so gung-ho about the IRA. But I won't spoil it for you, but she wrote something else, and that's the first time they released that information. And
I read it on the website. It was she did a heart with the
and you, I heart you.
Yeah, you in there, yeah.
So the other piece of information was that so there's an individual that we're also, again, all of us friends with, Fu Hong, and Fu was more close with David than all of us, and he had. At one point, David kept saying to Fu all these crazy things like, I killed these people, I killed that person, I did this. And Fu was like, come on, that's absurd. You know, I don't believe you for shit. And I think Fu had known that piece of information for a little bit of time, and David kept like saying crazier and crazier things. And one of the things David had said is, my next thing, since I got away with that, the next thing I'm going to do is kill everybody inside the Winnetka Bank. I'm going to drill into the roof of the Winnetka Bank. I'm going to kill everybody inside. And he was like, this is total horseshit, right? Total horseshit. And the police blotter, like in the like local newspaper, says like, you know, cement drill stolen from construction site Tuesday. Oh. Thursday, you know, silent alarm in Winnetka Bank goes off. Someone attempting to penetrate the roof. Literally, right? So he reads these things. He's like, holy fucking shit. He's not fucking playing around. Like, he really thinks he's going to drill into the fucking and kill her inside. Maybe he really did do this murder of these two people. Maybe I should go to the police. So he literally just like, they cracked the case when this fucking teenage kid just walked right into the police station. He's like, I think you need to look at Dave Biro.
And there's this dude that I know who's saying some crazy shit.
So the piece of information that they didn't let out was that David had was nervous and had misfired the gun and fired into the floor somewhere in another part of the house, like upstairs. And I guess Fu knew this. And he told the police, like, hey, you know, blah, blah, blah. And they're like, okay, whatever. And then, like, oh, by the way, you know, he misfired the gun upstairs. And they're like, oh, shit. And they got a search warrant, arrested him that afternoon, like, toot sweet, done. And he hasn't seen the light of day since.
Nope.
And Holy shit!
He was in Menard Maximum Security Penitentiary that was on 23-hour lockdown.
Yep.
From the time he was, like, you know, after trial, like 16 and a half, 17, until a good, like, 20-something. And I think that they petitioned or a law changed. So now he's in Joliet in a more, like, general population. You might have, like, a roommate and shit. You can, like, Google his fucking name and you'll see his prison, like, most recent photo.
There's a more recent one.
He's got, like, tattoos and he's all bald and shit.
Yeah, it's creepy.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah, I'm getting ready to. I got the Stolen Voices queued up right now on YouTube.
It was kind of kind of weird seeing shit like this. Crazy, somebody I know. Man. Just a dude I know. It's kind of weird.
Oh, my gosh.
And and you'll watch the video there. They clearly got authorization from the woman, but not the husband. So they never mentioned his name. It's like Nancy and her husband. But they have Chief Herbert Tim. He's a police chief at the time. And you'll see him talking, and he'll talk about, you know, this, that. And the police look like total buffoons. Like, it makes them look like complete morons. And to elaborate and add to the moron narrative for him, because he is a moron, he misfired his own gun in his office, like shot a hole in his desk.
Oh, he did a desk pop.
Yeah. And famously, after the only homicide prior to Richard and Nancy Langer being killed by David Biro, the only other homicide in the entire city's, like, 100-and-something-year history, or at least 100 years, was Laurie Dan had killed, and I can't remember the young man's name, killed a boy. But Laurie Dan's the murderer. That's terrible. I remember her name, but not the
Little boy she killed. Yeah. It was like one of the first, like, school shootings.
Yeah, it was like one of the first school shootings in the country.
Where, like, things got on lockdown and all of that.
CNN was there with the satellites and shit. That was like 1980-something. Maybe like 88,
89. And honestly, like, Clove, their town is so tiny.
It's like 2,000 people.
There's nobody. It's all, like, rich white people that live there. 90, I think it was the last time we looked, it was like
8%
white. 8.62%
white
people.
Well, so after the Laurie Dan murder and before Dave Biro's murder, but after he had already shot a hole in his desk, he petitioned to have all 20 officers carry Uzis.
Oh my God.
Uzis. And that got national press too. Uzis. God. Uzis.
So smart.
Chief Herbert Tim. So when you watch the show, remember he's the guy that popped one off on his desk and tried to get Uzis.
That's desk pop.
Because imagine that's why he needed an Uzi to be able to continue to do that.
Well, fucking nothing better than shooting a hole in the floor than doing it 19 rounds a second. 30 rounds a minute, whatever it is. Ba, 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 ba. Herbert Tim's in the house. Ba, 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 ba.
Oh, God. He's in the show, so you'll see that dude on the actual show when you watch it, Clove. So it's
looking
good.
Forward to
he's
it.
He's the person that they go now. To. Yeah, he's retired now.
Well, let's we went on for way too long. Yeah. Let's split this episode up, which I know you hate doing. But we got to stand, and we're going to stand for a podcast. And again, I don't do this out of guilt. We're not trying to guilt you. It's out of total love. Total love that we miss Chonilla.
We do. We do. We love Chonilla. But anyways, what we were saying earlier, we talked about, I played the clip from the video, but you guys can go and interact with all of the amazing content that you guys create on a regular basis. And the
forums, become a Patreon.
Yeah, and the forum's super active as well on Facebook, so definitely check that out. And then most Friday nights, you can hear them live.
Yeah.
And on camera.
And I would say I enjoy podcasts. Like, generally, I consume a fair amount. Leslie consumes even more. And I know I speak for her and I speak for myself. The podcast that we participate live in the most consistently is the Chonilla Friday Night Show.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
It's our most.
It's the don't miss one.
Yeah. We not just don't miss it. It's our schedule. It's our thing.
We are like, it's like date night, Friday night. That's what we
cool.
do, man.
It's cool. It's fun.
You guys are giving me the warm fuzzies.
Oh, you guys do a great job. We love it. You guys are awesome. It's a good show. Thank you for doing all you do.
Yes,
for sure. It's a lot coming from you guys.
So coming up on the John, we have Black Rob next week. That'll be really cool. Wednesday, and Heck Philly will be coming on soon. And just announced today, in conjunction with the Single Simulcast podcast, Wednesday, starting next Wednesday at 8:30 p.m. Eastern time, we are going to be live tweeting two episodes of the amazing MTV cartoon Daria, which is streaming right now on Hulu Plus and on Amazon Prime. So episode 1 and 2 of season 1 next Wednesday, April 1st. And
Trent,
every Wednesday,
for life.
We're going to, oh my God, I love Trent.
Mystic Spiral.
I love Trent. That show is so fucking awesome. I'm so excited.
How many
about
seasons
it.
Are there?
I think there's only 3.
So that's 60 some odd episodes?
Yeah, I don't know how many it is, but we're going to do them all. So we'll just do every Wednesday.
Pumped.
It's going to be really fun.
And we're doing it with Rashani?
Yeah, with Rashani from Single Simulcast and DeJohn. So
definitely. Are you talking about Black Rob that I see in the chat?
Yeah.
Yep, the very one. Cool. Yeah, he's going to be on the show next week. It's going to be fun. Yeah. And what else? You can find us at interracialjohn.com, JAWN, or search iTunes or Stitcher for Interracial John. You can follow me on Twitter at Leslie Mack, MAC. You can follow that dude at Very White Guy. He is very white. And you can find Clove at Clovisaurus occasionally. And Chonilla
on the shitter.
At Chonilla. No longer Chonilla.com, but just at Chonilla. They've owned, got it, got the space. I love it. Yes, very exciting. And you can also just go to Tronella.com to interact with all of their stuff and, you know, links to Patreon and Facebook and all of the other ways you can chill out with.
And I got to give you guys props. You, of the guests we've had on the show, best audio. I mean, really, listen to that.
Thank you very much.
Nothing. It's just...
We're in the pipe. 5 by 5.
Fucking beautiful. I'm telling you, ever since you kind of helped me tweak some things out, I've been really psyched. And it ended up, and I need, you know what it needed? And this is the God's honest fucking truth. This, all the horsing around, all the different plugs, all the different things I tried, none of it made any hoot of a difference until my wife heard you say, yes, I hear that too.
Yeah, because you can't hear for shit.
I'm just saying that you needed the extra white guy. Yeah. I'm saying you needed the extra white guy. Theme
One
of the
white
show.
Guy is not enough.
Theme of the show.
That's the theme. One white guy is not enough.
I'm glad I could help you.
You really did, because I at some level I was like, maybe she's right. Maybe I'm fucking crazy. Maybe I'm hearing things. This is, and then you came on. You're like, I don't hear anything at all. And I was like, wait a minute, play it back. Wait a minute, I hear that too. I'm like, oh, thank God. Oh my God, thank God. Is that me? And then it was like, well, it's the software. Oh, even better.
Mm-hmm. You're welcome.
You're welcome. There you go. All right, well, have a great day and rest of your weekend, Clove. Thanks again for joining us, and thanks Shirley in absentia.
Yes.
She's off recording the cackle.
Mm-hmm. I will, and it's always a pleasure hanging out with you guys.
Absolutely.
Absolutely. Thanks, right. And have enjoy the rest of your weekend.
Talk to you soon.
You right. Too.
Bye.
Bye.
All right. There we go.
Should we just dump it?
Good night, everybody.
High five.